Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
A very good morning to you. My name is Howard Feldman. This is a Chai FM special broadcast this Sunday morning. It is the 16th of May, 2021. It is the 5th of Sivan, 5781. Here are some updates that took place over Shabbat and over the weekend. In terms of rockets, over 278 rockets have been fired over Shabbat a day. At least 40 fell short, hitting Gazans. Gaza surrounding towns, including Sderot, continue to get hit hourly or even more. Ashkelon and surrounds had a rocket fire at 7:50 p.m., 8:25, 2:05, 2:05, 3:05, 4:29, 2 p.m., 6 p.m., 6:30 and 8:30. Ashdod and surrounds, 9:10 p.m., 1 a.m., 1:02 a.m., 1:12, 2:05, and so it went on. Be'er Sheva and surrounds, 9 p.m., 9:05, 12:35, 2:30 a.m., 2:50 a.m., 3:30 a.m., and 6:15. Tel Aviv and surrounds, including Elad, Ramla, Ashdod, Bnei Brak, Petach Tikva, Ramat Gan, 1:30 p.m., 1:33 p.m., 2:10 p.m. Netivot and surrounds were hit at 9:30 p.m. Rishon Litzion at and Nes Zion at 1:33. Or Yehuda, Petach Tikva, Rishon Litzion, Ramat Gan, Bnei Brak, Tel Aviv, again at 2 p.m. The West Bank near Shiloh, 2 p.m., struck near an Arab town, and so the sewage line there was damaged. Three rockets were fired from Syria, all fell short into Syria. Ofakim was hit at 11:15 p.m., 12:35 a.m., and 3 p.m. There was a drone attack at 11:45 a.m., and a near Beit Shemesh, Geffen and Trosh at 1:32 p.m. There was a further drone attack at 1:40 p.m. at Nachal Oz and Alumim. Damage and injuries included the impact on Eshkol region streets hit on the home and apartment was struck in Sderot. Thank God nobody was home, but there was serious damage. Injuries in Eshkol region falling near the entry to a shelter. Ashdod strike, there was on the port, caused a major fire. Be'er Sheva, direct hit on an apartment. Family was sleeping in their protective room. Three cows were killed by rockets in Eshkol region on a farm. Power was knocked out at part of Ashdod around 4 a.m. due to rocket strikes. Strikes impact in Givat Shmuel near Bnei Brak. There were no injuries. There was an impact near IKEA at Rishon LeZion. Impact in Ramat Gan. Damage and a large fire. Death from a strike in Ramat Gan. Two enemies killed, and as well as the launch team. Inside Israel itself, Jaffa, Molotov cocktails thrown on a 12-year-old mistakenly. He was an Arab Israeli at Akko. Heavy riots on Shabbat evening, burning of Jewish stores and properties. 192 people were treated by Magen David Adom for panic attacks due to rockets. 55-year-old was killed from shrapnel, that's in Ramat Gan, from a rocket. 33 people hurt on the way to a bomb shelter. One was seriously injured. Six people were injured during a riot. Lod, there was a cache of 15 firebombs found in a mosque. Shafram, Israeli Arab rioters enter a Eged parking lot and torch three buses. In Akko, undercover police caught firebombs, fireworks and grenade searches. Clashes also broke out in northern Israeli towns of Baka el-Garbia, Haifa, El-Farm and Jirz Azarka. The IDF, according to them, tunnels were struck, including one next to a kindergarten and a mosque. They struck near the main bank used by Hamas. It struck Islamic Jihad ATGM, struck Hamas observation post, struck Hamas storage depots, struck office of Hamad, head of security, struck Hamas military intelligence site. Three-story house was struck that contained launching sites, apparently seven killed, and including children that were being used as human shields. Weapons open workshops were struck in Jabalia, struck at least 20 other rocket launches. Media tower with Hamas sites leveled. U.S. sends complaints, must protect the enemy media, apparently. A drone launch team exploded on their launches, and they also, the IDF, struck the home of Hamas deputy chairman. Two apartments in large Mushatta tower was struck. In other areas, borders and West Bank, there were clashes in the Shomron and Yehuda West Bank and a Palestinian killed. Lebanon border clash, attempted infiltration by a group on Friday afternoon. Lebanese protester was killed. Lebanon right on the border, Shabbat day, attempt to remove cameras. Lebanon on Saturday evening attacked with Molotov cocktails, responded with riot control methods. There was an attempted bomb planting on a Lebanon border, attempted ramming attack near Hebron. The attacker was killed. There was also damage to the Jerusalem light rail by Shuafat. The light rail service north was suspended. That is an update. It is overwhelming. It is absolutely immense what is going on in Israel at the moment. Joining us on the line, Rolene Marks. Rolene, I've been through a list. It is almost impossible to comprehend. Rolene, good morning. Are you with us?
Good morning. I am with you guys. It has been a very, very difficult weekend. I mean, if you look at it, we seem to be getting it from all sides, which we are. We are getting it from the north, from the south, from the internal, and it has been a very, very overwhelming weekend. But I think if we can just talk a minute for the incredible deception carried out by the IDF in the early hours of Friday morning. This is quite extraordinary. Using the global media, you know, a comment went out in the early hours of the morning, and I saw it because, you know, we're not sleeping here, Howard. I mean, is it really unreal to make sure that your mamad, your shelter is all ready in case you have to do the inevitable dash in the middle of the night? But we received a message from the IDF spokesperson, Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus, very ambiguous that there were troops inside of Gaza. And, of course, the global media picked up on this, and everybody fell over each other to break the news that Israel was in Gaza. And then a very ambiguous press release a couple of hours later saying, no, we didn't say that. It was misinterpreted. Now, the minute I heard that, I thought, you know, this is very unusual, because Jonathan Conricus is very, very highly trained and professional. He does not drop information by mistake. And as it turns out, an incredible, incredible military strategy by the IDF to create the impression that we were in Gaza, lure all the fighters into the tunnels to take up positions to attack IDF troops and tanks as they would enter Gaza, and with 160 aircraft and 80 tons of ordnance, including bunker busters, managed to blow up the tunnels. I heard you just now speak about the media building. This is a building that the IDF spokesperson, Hildar Zilberman, just said that they had absolute proof that Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Hamas were using it as a research and development unit, a military intelligence office of the PIJ. It was very, very clear what was in there. I know that Canada have expressed concerns. The UN have expressed concerns. AP are demanding an explanation. And America have issued their concerns about what is happening to the media. It must be noted that they were given an hour to evacuate the building so that we could mitigate as many casualties as possible before the building was destroyed.
Well, isn't the more relevant question, how shocking was the media and how poor is AP reporting if Hamas and Islamic Jihad were operating in the very same building as them, but they failed to report anything about it? Because I've never seen a report on it.
Well, this is interesting, because it could account for the diabolical broadcasting that we've had to endure from Al Jazeera and associated press. at times, and the global media has gone absolutely insane.
I know, there's lots of tearing of clothes and gnashing of teeth and outrage. Of course, there's no outrage that Hamas is firing indiscriminately at Israel and might very well hit other media outlets with actual real people inside them. That doesn't seem to bother anybody. But the fact that an empty office of AP and Al Jazeera was hit is something that just nobody seems to be able to cope with emotionally.
Well, let's deal with several issues. Number one, as you've just so brilliantly said, that their rockets could hit a media building here. Yesterday, a rocket coming from the Gaza Strip almost hit the Austrian embassy in Ramat Gan, which resulted in the Austrian ambassador being just more than a little bit angry, Howard. The other issue is this constant call for proportionality. And, you know, let's take a look at international law, because I know that Israel's detractors like to screech international law at every given opportunity. The minute you place a legitimate target inside a building like this media building, you change the status of that to a legitimate military target. And I don't know any other military that would make sure that it was fully evacuated before striking it if it has become an enemy target. But this constant call for proportionality, everybody seems to say that, but nobody seems to give solutions as to what this is. Now, we've had well over 2,500 rockets fired at Israel indiscriminately. One landed in Taibe yesterday, that is an Arab village. One destined for Modi'in yesterday landed in another Arab village in the West Bank. And what should our response be? Should our response be just to fire 2,300 plus rockets into Gaza? Imagine the civilian casualties.
Well, that's perfectly, but that's perfectly proportionate, isn't it? I mean, if you want proportionate response, surely the response, and I'm not suggesting it, God forbid, but if you want proportionality, meet every rocket with a rocket.
But this seems to be the pressing issue here, is that people are screeching proportionality, but nobody can give as an explanation as to what they see that proportional response being. And as you so rightly said, that everybody's wrenching their clothes and screeching and taking to the streets screaming death to Jews, which of course must be their anti-Zionism, Howard, not their anti-Semitism at play. I mean, anybody now who tells you that this issue is about anti-Zionism and not anti-Semitism and we love Jews, mazel tov, gefilte fish, you need to check your moral compass.
That said, I do want to respond as to give an alternative, and I do think that there are a lot of good people that I'm seeing on Twitter that are responding negatively to Israel, but aren't necessarily anti-Semitic and don't believe they're anti-Semitic, but simply don't understand because they haven't been allowed to see the other side of the story. And that's the part that worries me most, actually.
And this is where we need everybody active. You know, guys, we have this magnificent Iron Dome. And as scared as I am when I hear the booms and the sirens, I know that that Iron Dome is working overtime to protect my life. We need you guys to be our Iron Dome against misinformation and facts. I know it's very difficult at this point to respond without emotion, but make sure you are armed with the facts. If you are seeing something that you don't understand, ask us so that we can explain it to you. I know there are people out there who think children being killed, Israel bad, therefore we have to support the Palestinians. First of all, we need to explain to them that you cannot draw a moral equivalency between a terror entity that is recognized as a terror entity by the majority of the world, including the United Nations, including the EU and the United States. You cannot draw a moral equivalency there. For the love of little green apples, everybody, please don't take your information from Instagram influencers and blue tick Hollywood celebrities. They just want to rack up their social justice credentials. They don't have an understanding. I'm talking to you, Trevor Noah, Susan Sarandon, of the situation on the ground there. They think that because they have a platform, they are able to speak. Please challenge when you see inaccuracies and do it factually. Without trying to get emotional. It's very difficult to do.
Rolene, I'm keeping a very, very tight schedule. Thank you for that. Please just be safe. Keep doing the amazing work that you are doing. And we'll, of course, keep everybody updated with your wonderful information. It is 9:15. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.
Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
101.9 Chai FM. We are bringing you an hour update on the situation in Israel. Joining us on the line, Lawrence Asif. He is from Magen David Adom, Israel's emergency service. Lawrence, a very, very good morning to you. Thanks for speaking to us. Not an easy time that you are living through at Magen David Adom, no doubt.
That's true. That's very true.
Give us a sense of the injuries that Magen David Adom is dealing with. How many people have been injured? And what worried me as well is the incredibly high number of people suffering from panic attacks. Give us an overview.
The latest figures that I have are that 272 people have been injured. Of them, 109 have been physically injured. 8 people have been killed. 6 people are seriously injured. 11 moderate. And 84 are lightly injured. It's important to note that 163 people were injured running to bomb shelters or taking cover, of which 2 women unfortunately died from the injuries. 5 people sustained moderate injuries running to bomb shelters, and 156 were lightly injured. It's also important, vitally important to note that it's not only physical injuries that we're seeing. We're also seeing people that are needing shock treatment. Post-trauma and so on. We have 197 people that have been treated for shock. The types of injuries, the 4 basic types of blast injuries. I won't go through them all, but we're seeing fractures, amputations, crush injuries, burns, cuts, lacerations and so on.
Is Magen David Adom coping?
We are definitely coping. All our teams are stretched way beyond the limit, but over and above normal ambulance services that we provide to the country, we have a large number of medics, paramedics, and other medical personnel that have been sort of enlisted or summoned to be present at the different Magen David Adom stations, and some of them are allocated only to go out to areas where there's been a rocket attack or a rocket has fallen and there are injuries. So it's a tremendous logistic operation, and we're covering it very, very well. Although I must say that we're going into the 7th day now, and people are, we're exhausted.
The exhaustion is one factor. What about the safety of Magen David Adom personnel? People have families.
We're equipped with armored vests and helmets, and you have to do what you have to do. That's the job, and that's what it is frightening, and it is out of everyone's comfort zone, of course, but that is a task, and that's what has to be done. No one else is going to be doing it. So we go out with a lot of support from our colleagues, and there are areas that are more dangerous than others, or there might be internal conflict, which we've seen as well, into areas, mixed areas, where ambulances and personnel have been attacked by rioters, which makes it, that adds an extra element of danger already on what we're doing.
Unfortunately, that's where we do have to leave it. Lawrence Asif, Magen David Adom in Israel, talking to us about Israel Emergency Services. I'm Howard Feldman. This is a Chai FM special broadcast bringing you the latest information and updates from Israel.
Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It's just about to go 9:20. Joining us on the line, Akiva Israel, a correspondent, giving us a bird's eye view summary of events in Israel over Shabbat. Akiva, a very, very good morning. I know how busy you are. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us. Can you give us a sense of what is going on from a bird's eye view perspective?
Well, what is going on is mass rocket barrage. So while we have no cause for this, there's no demand from Gaza. There's no claim or problem. We have hundreds of rockets being fired nightly directly at civilian areas.
What preempted this? There are two events that are being used as official catalysts. One, of course, was the so-called evictions, and we've certainly spoken on this radio show quite a lot about it in terms of the dispute, and that's what it is a dispute between two parties. There's obviously the issue around the Temple Mount, but was this just an opportunity that Hamas were waiting for? Or was this genuine anger and outrage that Hamas could just not contain anymore and therefore decided to launch this type of attack?
It's kind of like criminology. How does one understand exactly what's going on internally or exactly what the claim is? We really don't know. And in this case, they haven't even been able to express a complaint. You know, the complaint is, we want to kill Jews. You know, within range of where they are, they're being bombed. The IDF is doing its job and trying to get control of the situation. There's an Air Force base. One of Israel's major Air Force's base is the same range as Ashdod. Now, Ashdod has been hit with over 200 rockets in the middle of the civilian neighborhoods, or they've been targeted. Thank God, only a few have gotten through. And Ashdod Port, which is one of Israel's major economic hubs. Have either one been targeted? Have either one been attacked? You could claim those are very valid military targets. Of course, one is a Air Force base, which is actually attacking them. And the other is a port, which is a major economic hub. No attacks on either environment. No attacks on either one. But civilian neighborhood, civilian neighborhood, civilian neighborhood. Last night after Shabbat, my daughter was heading back from our area in Beit Shemesh, which has not been in the target line. And as she was passing the airport, the area around midnight, which is when a heavy barrage happened last night in the Tel Aviv area, tens of rockets were fired. I think it was in the range of 50 to 75. Of course, tens of iron domes go up, and all of that was happening right over her head. She's 7 months pregnant. She pulled over with her husband, screaming, what do they do? Where do they go? This was literally happening right over their heads. So this is pure terror tactic. This is pure war crime. And the world's blaming Israel. And yet no one can even express what's going on. What's the justification? What's the claim? What do they want? They want to kill Jews. So they're throwing tens to hundreds of rockets a day. We have another friend, a college friend of one of my daughters, living in Ashkelon. They're still on Zoom classes because of Corona. And, you know, but she's like, well, you know, takes most of her classes obviously in a shelter. And she's like, well, you have to decide when is it safe to shower? When's the least likely time of day when we might get attacked? Cause they're getting hit every 10 to 30 minutes, 7:24. When can I go cook something?
Yeah.
When can I run to the store?
The impact of this, the toll of people is absolutely mind blowing. And when I'm listening to you, as I'm listening to you describe just almost normal everyday activities that people want to do to carry on their lives, interrupted and decimated with real consequence potentially, it's horrific to think about. And when you hear the screaming of proportionality in terms of Israel response, it's just mind-blowing, because when you, if you think, is this the response, is this a proportional response to the so-called evictions, well, I hardly think so. Akiva, we unfortunately have very, very little time. I do want to thank you for chatting to us. Just just to give us your perspective. We do unfortunately need to move on. We are going to be chatting right now to Hila Rose Friedman, who's the Deputy Ambassador to the Israeli Embassy here in South Africa. We will be chatting to her after that. We will cross back to Anthony Reich. He's going to bring us an analysis on the current events in Israel. Following a discussion with Anthony, Zev Krengel, Vice President of the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, will be joining us as well. I probably will not have time for your questions, but if you can send them through, if I do have the opportunity, I will certainly ask them.
Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Deputy Ambassador to the Israeli Embassy here in South Africa, Hila Rose Friedman. A very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Howard, and good morning to our listeners. I'm okay. You know, under the circumstances, I have family in Israel as well, so obviously I'm following the events closely. But
following the events closely there, you, of course, are under pressure here in South Africa as well. There was a protest. I'm not sure how that went over the weekend outside the Israeli embassy. I think they chose to do it on Shabbat, which is an interesting choice of a day considering no one is there. But give us a sense of what is going on.
Okay, so first of all, to the listeners who's got families in Israel or not, the ones who are not fully aware of the situation, for 5 days already, Hamas terror organization and the Palestinian Authority have been firing rockets towards Israel, deliberately targeting Israeli civilians. Over 2,500 rockets were fired so far. They have been setting millions of Israelis, men, women, children, Jewish, Christian, and Muslims, into bomb shelters. And it all started due to Hamas terror attacks. Hamas is acting violently. They started shooting at Jerusalem, the very same place they're trying to protect, where there's around 50% of Muslim population. And at the moment, Israel is doing whatever is needed to protect its civilians. Obviously, no country in the world will allow this to happen. It's Israel's right and obligation to protect its citizens. We have responded forcefully to these attacks and will continue to respond forcefully until the security of our people in Israel is restored.
The situation there is absolutely horrific. The situation on social media and in worldwide media, as far as I'm concerned, is as much of a bloodbath, because there doesn't seem to be an appreciation or an understanding of what Israel and what Israeli civilians are going through. We're seeing that here in South Africa, but in fact, South Africa is just one area. We're seeing it across America. We're seeing it in Europe. We're seeing smart people saying really, really stupid things. Why is it that you think that the sympathy, appreciation, and understanding for Israel and Israeli civilians is just so hard to get across?
Well, I think in this situation, there's always a side that seems stronger than the other side, but it doesn't mean that the side which is stronger is not right in his actions or not doing things that are justifiable. Just the fact we have Iron Dome, it took us years to have in order to protect our citizens. We're doing the utmost to protect our citizens. Doesn't mean we have to apologize for that. And this is something the social media might not see always. Also, Israel is committed to do everything in its power to protect the citizens in Israel, as I said, Jewish, Christian, and Muslims, and also the Palestinians in the territories. So we prevent all, we put all of our efforts, the money, the infrastructure, everything in the cause of protecting human lives. Even now, when we are acting in Gaza, we try to let people, the Palestinians, know before we attack so they can evacuate. But the Hamas is just doing the other thing. They're firing rockets into Israel on Israeli civilians from within civilian neighborhoods in Gaza, hiding behind their own citizens, effectively using them as human shields. So I don't think we need to apologize for protecting our citizens. What I think is, and we did see a lot of actors, organizations, governments in the international community that have called for Hamas terror organization to stop its brutal attacks and support Israel. So we call all international community to condemn Hamas terror organization attacks. I think defeating Hamas does not only serve Israel's interests, it serves the interest of all those who seek peace, stability, and security.
Well,
in
that is interesting because...
And unfortunately, many things, many people in the media, they just don't see that. But that's
reality. But they choose not to see it. You have to have a deliberate focus on not seeing what is going on and not seeing the Israeli suffering and the Israeli side in order to continue with the narrative. It is impossible to say that Israel needs to respond proportionately, but in fact, these rockets are the so-called response to the so-called evictions and the Temple Mount situation. Is that a proportionate response? Well, obviously not, but it depends on where you choose to hold your view, and that's unfortunately very dangerous. The other problem is what is going on, obviously, within the borders of Israel, because this is a relatively new issue that Israel is dealing with, where we're having areas of unrest within Israeli borders. How is Israel responding to that?
Well, again, as I said, we are committed to protect our civilians. We have information of where places that needs to be targeted or things that needs to be discussed within our government. But as I said, we're doing the utmost to protect the civilians, regardless of everything that's happening through the borders as well. I can tell you, obviously, it's the interest of not only Hamas organization. Hamas terror organization have been planning these attacks for months. It's not that it's something new. It's not just because of Sheikh Jarrah it all started. They were looking
for an opportunity,
and now they're cynically using this opportunity, this specific thing that happened in order to send the rockets to Israel. And it's not only Hamas, it's Iran, it's a lot of other players around that are cynically using the situation to target Israel because they're looking for war.
Well,
they want to disturb the people in Gaza from having an election, and they're looking for war.
Well, the
this
other
time
thing,
it was Sheikh Jarrah, and it could have been something else.
The other irony and the other thing where people need to use cognitive dissonance is you can't keep claiming that Gaza is an open-air prison like many people want to do, even though it borders Egypt, but that they forget as well. But at the same time, 2,500 rockets have been fired from Gaza, hardly a sign of an open-air prison. When you've got buildings that are housing the international press in the same building as the terror organizations, but those so-called media houses have not reported on it when it's happening under their very, very noses. That is just shows you the level of absurdity that we're dealing with.
Exactly. You cannot know that they're not aware of that. And also Hamas terror organization, they don't care about anyone. They don't care about their own citizens even, because many of the rockets that they are firing are actually misfired in Gaza, and they kill their own people around 300 rockets have been fired by the Palestinian terrorists, were misfired in Gaza and resulted in killing Gazan people, including their own children. So you cannot say that they're not aware of what's going on, the international community who sits there, and you cannot say that Hamas terror organization and the Palestinian Authority, they have any sort of moral standards and they care for the lives of people. They don't care for the life of their own people even. So
Ambassador, I know that you can't answer for the South African government. All questions about their approach needs to actually be asked of them. But it's got to be very difficult for you and for members of the Israeli embassy here in South Africa, considering the current events and the hostility of the South African government.
Well, you just said it right. Unfortunately, I cannot, you should direct this question to the South African government. I can only answer on behalf of Israel and the Israeli government. But I can tell you that here in the embassy and in Israel, we continue to do whatever we do on a daily basis. And it's trying to enhance the relations between both our countries to benefit with the local population. And I can also tell you that for every person that loudly screams anti-Israeli comments and hatred things, there's there's thousands of people who want us to continue to be here in South Africa, and they want to cooperate with us, and they show their love and support on the ground, like when we go to villages to open running water, and we do it
and isn't that what counts? Isn't that what counts at the end of the day?
They show us love, and they dance, and they show their support.
Unfortunately, Hilla Rose Friedman, thank you for taking the time to speak to us. That's Hilla Rose Friedman, the Deputy Ambassador to the Israel Embassy here in South Africa, bringing us an update as to what is going on in Israel from their perspective and what they are dealing with.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. It's been a long time since we've last spoken on a Sunday.
Absolutely.
And it could be in better circumstances, so I'm happy to give an update, although I'm sad that it has to be under these circumstances. And I know that you've already had quite a lot of information from various other people in Israel and updates of people who've experienced things. So I think this might just be an idea to take a little step back for a moment and just to try and assess where has this come from and potentially where could this be going to. So I think the first thing that I want to just highlight to people is that this is really not about the evictions in East Jerusalem or the events that took place on the Temple Mount last week. I think that we all have to understand that those were part of the preparations that went into trying to create a situation. The preparations were made already some time before. This is not just a knee-jerk reaction of anger at events that took place in East Jerusalem or on the Temple Mount. Those were really part of the plan that Hamas seems to have developed, including the plan of creating all of this the riots and tension within Israel between Arabs and Jews. It seems to all have been part of their preparation for getting to the situation where they could justify this particular bombardment, this barrage, this operation that we've been forced into. And so I don't think that people need to be under any illusion about the fact that this is in response to all of that. I mean, even if we believe for a moment that there was outrage at the proposed evictions in East Jerusalem, let's assume that all of that is correct, which obviously is not the case, but let's assume for a moment that it was all correct. It seems a very, very unusual, unlikely, inappropriate for thousands of missiles to be launched from Gaza in order to protest evictions taking place in East Jerusalem. That just doesn't seem to match up for me, or indeed the possibility of a knee-jerk reaction against events that took place on the Temple Mount, even if the Israeli police were unjustified in going into the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which once again I would really challenge because I think there was a lot of justification. But even if there was a lack of justification, it just doesn't seem to be connected that these missiles would be launched in order to protest that. What help does it give? What solution does that provide to the particular problem? Now, we know that there is no solution, that this was just all part of another justification for entering into this operation, for firing these thousands of missiles towards Israel. And it's important that people have to understand what the context is without being misled by people who try to show that Israel is at fault here. There is no fault. I mean, this part of the world is a very complex situation. Nothing is simple. There are a lot of conflicts. There are a lot of issues from both sides. And an operation like this doesn't heal any of those problems and doesn't provide any solutions to those things. So I think we just need to understand that. And Israel, of course, has endured a lot of difficulty over the past few days, particularly yesterday, last night. And of course, I did hear earlier Rolene talking about this so-called deception of the international press.
Just take us through that again, because that is it's a fascinating, fascinating story.
You know, whether the international press were truly deceived or not remains to be seen. What we do know is that Lieutenant General Jonathan Conricus, who is the IDF's international correspondent, provides information to the international press, has developed a very good, close working relationship with the international press over time. And I think that the IDF does value getting accurate information out into the international press as opposed to misleading them. Now, it's true to say that he did make a statement on Friday which was ambiguous. It was interpreted in a certain way. Whether it was intended to have been interpreted like that is unclear to all of us. But the point of the matter is that the statement didn't specifically say that the IDF had launched a ground forces attack into Gaza, but it did leave the international press with the impression that that could have been the case, and they went out immediately reporting that. And of course, as Rolene has already mentioned, that meant that many of the Hamas operatives came out of wherever they were hiding and into the tunnels, which are run underneath Gaza and are very much focused within Gaza City itself, but indeed in other parts of Gaza. These tunnels are used to store weapons. They're used to attack people. They're used to move around the Gaza Strip so that people are not exposed to potential assassination by Israeli aircraft. So the operatives moved into these tunnels. This meant two things. Thing number one was that the operatives were separated out from civilians. That was a really important action. And of course, the second was that they were concentrated in these tunnels, which gave the IDF the opportunity not only to bomb the tunnels and to get rid of those and to damage the tunnels, which are providing a significant threat to Israel, even though they run within Gaza City and within the Gaza Strip itself, but also to catch the operatives in those tunnels, two birds with one stone. So that's really what happened when the IDF bombed what's called the Metro, which is this underground system of tunnels that runs within Gaza. A very groveling letter of apology written by the IDF spokesperson to the international press, expressing apology for potentially having misled the press and saying that there was absolutely no intention to mislead the press, and to just to reinforce the importance of the trust that has been developed between the IDF spokesperson's office, and in particular with Lieutenant General Jonathan Conricus, who actually is about to retire from the position that he's held for some years. And the international press corps that he has kept briefed over this period of time. So was that a sophisticated ploy, or was it an honest mistake? Nobody will really ever know. But the point was that the international press definitely did help to get those operatives out of their hiding places into those tunnels, and gave the IDF an opportunity to score hits both on the operatives and on the tunnels themselves, which was always part of the plan.
Well, this type of tactic isn't unique to Israel. We've seen this. We know some of the most famous battles of the Second World War were all about creating a diversion in one area and then acting in another. So even if it was an intentional thing, which pretty much, I think, does look like it, I know that we were struggling to try and understand on Thursday and Friday whether Israel was in fact in Gaza or not. It didn't make, none of the information seemed to make a lot of sense to us as we try to figure it out. But this type of tactic is not really that unusual.
Well, not unusual and potentially not even unjustified. The only issue is that the system of trust that has been developed between the IDF spokesperson and the international press is really important, and potentially could have been damaged. And of course, that groveling letter that I saw yesterday was designed to try somehow to recoup that and to try and ensure that the damage is not permanently done.
That said, Anthony, the international press, hardly a friend of Israel. The cognitive bias, the cognitive dissonance needed to continue this narrative that Israel is the oppressor and the villain and guilty of genocide, whilst 2,500 rockets is rained upon civilian populations, and the Western press screaming about an empty building where Associated Press and Al Jazeera were housed, does show you the level of dissonance. Take us through what is known about that situation, the fact that that Israel has alleged that Hamas, the terror organization, and the intelligence unit were sitting in the same, very same building and offices as the as these so-called international press organizations. What is known about this?
Well, we have to really trust our intelligence service in that, because we have no way of proving or disproving that that's the situation. We know a few things. We know for a fact that Hamas have a strategy of putting their weapons and their armaments and housing their own personnel within civilian neighborhoods. And they do that because they know that Israel is less likely to attack those for fear of creating civilian casualties. So Hamas takes advantage of Israel's humanitarianist side by actually housing themselves within areas that they know that Israel is less likely to attack. And by the way, the international press is another human shield that Hamas could potentially use, because of course attacking the press, even if it's an empty building, does create outrage. Another human shield that Hamas likes to use is a hospital. So we know that beneath the hospital in Gaza, many of the senior operatives are housed and much of their arms and ammunition are housed, because if Israel was to attack that hospital compound, even though below the hospital is really a military base for all intents and purposes, it would create international outrage. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least if Hamas were adopting a strategy of trying to house themselves and their equipment in amongst the international press, because that would be an ideal headline for them, that the international press has been hit by the Israeli military. Just the same as this morning, they were trying to advertise that the Israeli military had hit near a hospital. Why would they hit near a hospital? Because obviously there's massive movements going along around that hospital, which is for all intents and purposes a military base. So none of that is very surprising. It's very difficult for us sitting here to be able to draw judgment as to whether that particular attack was justified or not. The international press will scream foul. Hamas will scream foul. The Israeli intelligence will say that's where the operations were being held out of. Very, very difficult for us to know. But what I do know is that when we see these pictures of rockets being launched from the 5th and 6th and 7th floors of apartment buildings, residential apartment buildings, then it just reinforces the strategy and the tactic that we know Hamas like to adopt.
And certainly the complicitness, if such a word exists, complicity of the international press. And I just see News24 literally just released a headline: UN chief dismayed and disturbed by Israel's strike on Gaza. A UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres was dismayed by civilian casualties in Gaza and deeply disturbed by Israel's strike on a building containing international media outlets, a spokesperson said on Saturday in response to reporters' questions. So they are dismayed by Israel's attack, but there doesn't seem to be any dismay over the fact that thousands upon thousands of rockets have been fired into civilian territories in Israel. Are we seeing the blatant hatred towards Israel and towards Jews in its form that we just don't want to see it? Is it all there for us? But
Think that they should also be dismayed at the fact that more than 200 Hamas rockets have actually not even made it out of the Gaza Strip. They have fallen within Gaza itself, and many of those casualties, civilian casualties, children included, have come as a result of Hamas's own rockets rather than as a result of Israeli firepower, which is, of course, what they're claiming, because it's very easy to say, well, so many people have been killed and it's all because of Israel's attacks. But let's not just forget that so many of those people have been killed as a result of Hamas's own rockets. No dismay at that, of course. And why should there be? Because, of course, this is all about the underdog. And once again, we're seeing Hamas operatives wearing civilian clothing, looking for all intents and purposes like individuals living, civilians living in the apartment buildings. We don't see them wearing uniforms. They don't look like a military. They don't look like an army. Whereas, of course, the IDF are all military and all have, you know, the equipment, and they look like the oppressors. So this is all about the narratives which we've become so accustomed to.
Absolutely.
And one would have liked to think that someone like Antonio Guterres would know a little bit better than to be so amazed and dismayed. He didn't mention the fact that Israel knocked before it actually...
Oh, no, it never does. They never do. Those are the types of things that they unfortunately leave out. It is 9:50. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. I appreciate you speaking to us today, and I wish you a Chag Sameach. Thank you for the update. The South African situation here in South Africa, not particularly positive either. Durco has already issued a very negative statement. The South African government doing what it always does. I wrote an article in the Jewish Report this week saying I'm not sure that we should care if the South African government, the ANC, with their track record on international standing or lack of international standing, in my view, embracing Cuba, which denies people basic human rights. They have been horribly silent with regard to the suffering in Zimbabwe. They sheltered war criminals. They have remained silent with regard to the treatment of Uyghur Muslims in China, and yet they are very vocal around Israel. It is, in my view, they are irrelevant, but I'm in a, that is my view on it. It doesn't mean it is a healthy one at all. Zev Krengel, Vice President of the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, pretty certain doesn't agree with my view on it. Zev, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Thank you. You do. I think the one you left out, which for me is the most glaring, is the Tigray's in Ethiopia. I mean, this is in our continent, proper genocide, exclusive stuff that comes out of CNN. And I mean, it's a minority, it's a Christian going for the holiest city in Ethiopia, which has got 1,000-year Christian history. Bombing the cities, it's just horrific. Not a word. So we're very much on the same page. I think for us as South African jury, the frustration with the ANC, with the EFF, and then of course with government, is the lack of a more impartial look at this very complex conflict. And what we always said to the ANC and the government, you don't have to abandon, that they've got this long-standing, we will support the Palestinians at all cost, which they've had for many years, and we can actually live with it. The thing is, if you fully stand by someone, you'll have to tell them when they're doing something wrong, and you'll have to at least be some level of having impartiality that, as you say, over 2,000 rockets have hit civilian areas in a sovereign state. Now, we can have an argument, should the Israelis go into the Al-Aqsa, shouldn't they, should they bomb? But like that, there's no mention of indiscriminate rockets going into, civilian areas, and whether it's a Trevor Noah or whether someone else trying to say there's a big, that Israel can just crush Gaza. They can, but then they're going to have to kill 1 million people, which they wouldn't ever do. So although they have this massive firepower, there's a very difference morally where Hamas is actively trying to hit any civilian, and the Americans have spent millions of their own tax dollars with the Israelis to develop some sort of air defenses to try and save their civilians. So it's just we see the conflict very different to a lot. I think what we need to understand, there are people out there that are true anti-Semites and they just want the destruction of the state of Israel. And then I really do believe there's quite a lot of people who are just seeing what the media is showing, and they do believe Israel is the big bad wolf and the bully. And that's where we have to come. We have to educate better. We have to explain it. We have to keep calm. We can't think everyone's a raving anti-Semite. You know the ones at all. But for me, it's not present in any country. We're working with the ANC, with government currently, to try and keep the flames calm. We don't want to import this conflict here. If the anti-Israel lobby starts to keep doing protests, we're going to have to do our own. It's not where we want to be. We want to try and calm it down. And we want to just call for clear heads and hopefully a ceasefire. And what I would love my government to call for the same as what I call for is a stop to any civilian death on either side.
So Zev, a few people have asked me, do I think that South African Jews are in danger? Do I think that we have a problem here with anti-Semitism? And my honest feeling is that we don't. That there is a very strong anti-Israel narrative in government. And as you've, I believe, rightly said, there are a number of absolute real anti-Semite Jew haters that are part of that circle. But beyond that, I am always of the belief that South Africans across the general population are not anti-Semitic and in fact are fairly respectful and value Jews and Jewish culture. The question is, are we losing the war, the narrative, and the battle against the haters in a broader context?
So, I mean, look, off the bat, South Africa is probably the safest place to be as a Jew almost in the world. The only two countries that have less anti-Semitism is New Zealand and Mexico. So, and I'm talking about violent anti-Semitism. I'm talking about being punched, being slapped, being verbally abused. We've got the lowest levels. We've got the lowest levels. We can have that maybe another day. You'll bring me on and we can bring down why do we have the lowest levels when we have a government that is so pro-Palestinian and actually has an anti-Israel stance. You can say what you want, it's an anti-Israel stance. And I think there's two factors. I think they've always tried to differentiate that they want to protect their local Jewish population almost at all costs. And they do believe Israel needs to be criticized because they perceive Israel as similar to what they had to go through. And, of course, they've got a very, very close link to the PLO, which comes very historically. In the apartheid regime and Israel were very close in the 70s and 80s, and they were being trained by the Cubans and the Russians with the PLO. So there's a complicated history that we need to be very aware of. But as Southern Jewry, we're unbelievably well protected. I take it very seriously. You read in Jewish Report, you met with the Minister of State Security. They understand our special needs. They understand any radical Islamic attack in South Africa could have a Jewish flavor. They're not blinded by any of that. So I think we're in a very good position on physical security. I do think we have to hold the moral high ground. I actually mentioned this, I think, on Friday, that we can't then behave terribly when some of the worst anti-Semitism that we've picked up at the board is coming from these private WhatsApp groups, whether it's at a university, whether it's at a hospital, whether it's at a place of work. And then if that happens, you need to contact the Board of Deputies, and you can't start, I'm calling for indiscriminate carpet bombing over Gaza.
100%.
That doesn't, first of all, that's not how the Jews have ever behaved. Second of all, that doesn't help our cause. And third of all, we will slowly but surely track down the anti-Semites and get them. You have this Laswala, this guy in the Limpopo for 4 years sat behind his screen, threatening us and this and come and get me and being all whatever. And he landed up getting arrested and he's going pleaded guilty of a plea bargain and he's got a criminal record. So,
because the truth is our constitution does protect Jews. It does protect freedom of religion. It does protect us from hate speech. We do have one of the most sophisticated constitutions in the world and we do need to rely on the systems that are available to us.
Yeah, look, they're laborious. They're tedious. We're fighting cases 11 years on. But the Southern Jewish Board of Deputies is relentless. We'll never let an anti-Semite go unchallenged if we believe it's anti-Semitic. And we'll just keep going. And thank God we've got an unbelievable, backup system of our Jewish lawyers and advocates who work tirelessly, to defend these cases and to do these cases. And we've had great successes. And with this Nsepo Dlamini, where he apologized. That was a 2015 case, from Gordon
And a huge and very, very significant win.
Huge and significant, it does take time. It is frustrating. I think our frustration at the board is, today's newspaper is tomorrow's fish and chips paper. I suppose if you know that, you've given away your age. But for us, we have to keep going. So people forget Laswala. People forget. And then it sits on our desk, but we're relentless. And I must say, Wendy Kahn, it's one of her great strengths. And she just keeps going. And, whether you're a cabinet minister of Fatima Hajaigul and Ndiwe Sisulu, or whether you're an unknown in the Swala, in the middle of the Limpopo, or for that matter, Lamprecht, who sits in Johannesburg, we don't care where you are, we don't care who you are. We will use our legal method means to make sure you brought to book, and there are consequences to being an anti-Semite in South Africa. And so far, we definitely winning the war, and the society of South Africa is an unbelievable society, black and white.
Absolutely right.
So for me, I'm very, very, people often ask, well, why do you fight so hard? I say, because it's worth it.
100%.
The community is amazing. And we live in a country that we very, very well accepted. I mean, Australia, England.
Zev Kringle, unfortunately, it's just gone at 10 o'clock. They're going to throw me out of studio in just 1 second. So I do need to leave it there. Zev Kringle, Vice President of the South African Jewish Board of Deputies. That's it. That is our 1 hour intense update with regard to the situation in Israel. We tried to bring you as many different voices as we possibly could, both civilians, people at Magen David Adom, the Deputy Israeli Ambassador, and our regular correspondents and analysts. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it brought you a lot of information. Just keep your faith, keep strong, connect to God, connect it to everything that is important. Have a Chag Sameach, and we'll catch you, of course, on Wednesday morning.